you true believers, it's that time you've been waiting for. Gather around your iPod, radio, or whatever you're listening to, for Mitch and John are about to go into the power cosmic. Sit back and listen to comic books, toys, movies, and more with those two guys that've got nothing better to do but talk about the stuff that you love. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, wake the neighbors, phone the kids. It's time for the Power Cosmic Podcast. Hey, everybody. We hope you're having a nice holiday season. Welcome to the Power Cosmic Podcast. This is your host, Mitch Halleck, the director or creator or promoter or whatever the hell you want to call me today, the Galactus of comic book comicdom in Connecticut. How about that? Is that a good title? I am the producer of Terrific Con, Connecticut's number one terrific comic con, coming at you this August at the Mohegan Sun Resort in Uncasville, Connecticut. Join us once again, will you? And if you're into video games and such, don't forget I have another show, Connecticut Gamer Con, happening April 1st and 2nd. But enough about me. Let's turn the mic towards our friend up north, a man from Dedham, Massachusetts, at the Rain and Flea Market. I'm sorry, John doesn't live in Dedham. I just got that there. He's in Waltham. But anyway, he's at the Rain and Flea Market. You can catch him every weekend. Right now is a special good time because he's got a bunch of goodies that'll be perfect under your tree or whatever worshiping thing you're into at holiday time. John Cimino, the writer of Back Issue Magazine articles, Kirby Collector articles, and, of course, Alter Ego. He's the friends with the stars. He's Roy Thomas's number one guy, John Cimino. Say hey, John.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Good to see you. Good to see you, Mitch, and the holiday spirit is in full swing.
Oh, my God, I got Yule time coming out my yin-yang, John. Yule time coming out my yin-yang. In fact, I got to dress up this weekend as we record this for the annual Chaz and AJ. That's the radio program I'm on here in Connecticut as the king of the nerds, reporting and reviewing all things nerdy. I have to dress up this Friday for their annual Toys for Tots Christmas toy drive. Last year I was Yoda. This year I will be appearing as, well, they call me Chubby Captain America.
With those red dishwasher gloves, correct?
Not only the dishwasher gloves, but they love the skin-tight bathing cap Captain America helmet that I wear.
And it's not supposed to be skin-tight, but it just happens.
Well, it just happens. It was made out of, I think, vibranium or something. It just goes around my head. The unstable molecules have worn off on it. It's not as stretchy as it used to be. Well, you've seen it. What do you call me, actually? You don't call me Cap when I wear it. Who do you refer to me as?
Could you look more, Charlie 27 and a half.
Charlie 27 for fans of the original Guardians of the Galaxy out there who have first appeared in Marvel Superheroes issue 3?
Yes, that's correct. Marvel Superheroes issue 3. But didn't he get the new costume in, like, Marvel Presents, like, 13?
Yeah, he did. I mean, he was from Jupiter, I believe, wasn't it? And the gravitational force was so strong.
He originally looked like he had that dome helmet, and then he had that...
He was squat.
That space suit.
He was squat. Let's just say that. He was very squat. He was muscular.
How about squat and muscular? He looked a cross between your physique and Frank Cass's physique.
Oh, please. He was no Volstagg. He had it where it counted. And the original Guardians of the Galaxy, they had Major Vance Astro, right?
Yeah.
Who was the laughingstock of the galaxy because he went on a 1,000-year trip into space, and they put him in suspended animation. And just a few short years after he took off for his 1,000-year trip to Alpha Centauri, I believe, a nearby star system, they discovered how to travel faster than light. So he was the Rip Van Winkle of his time. When he woke up, everything was gone. He sacrificed the world he knew. And everybody basically laughed about it because they could travel easily between the stars. Is that not correct?
That's correct. And then there was Yondu, who was actually the only one that really appeared in the movie.
With the big fin on his head. And I'm trying to remember what planet Yondu was from. I think he was Alpha Centaurian or something.
Yeah, he could have been. Like, once again, my knowledge on the Guardians of the Galaxy is not that up to date because they were such...
Well, there was also Martinek, the guy that was made of crystal.
And then who was the one that was Starhawk? Wasn't Starhawk
Starhawk, yeah, not Star-Lord. Everybody mixes those two up. But Starhawk was the guy in the blue outfit with the big yellow fin cape things coming off his head and stuff.
Yeah, and he was probably, and he is probably the first transgender superhero ever. Is that
correct? He turned into a, he was a male, and then he transformed into a female later on in the run. And also you had, now and then you had Moondragon, who appeared in the story. The bald-headed woman, was that Mantis? Moondragon. Mantis was in the Avengers, too. But the Guardians of the Galaxy, I just recently bought their collection, their trade. It was only like $7. And I love when you can buy a nice trade for $7 because the story quality is priceless in there. So for $7 to get a reprint, again, it's a reprint, so it's worthless, but it's not worthless if you're into good storytelling. Am I not right?
Oh, absolutely. Because one, you get it all nice, crisp, and clean. You get it all right there. And you get just a good classic story of when comics were great.
Yeah, and they actually meant something. As we talked in the previous episode, there was an interconnectivity, a world between the two. They created a universe. So if you were a fan, there was little, like nowadays they call them Easter eggs. But back then, they would refer back to other issues. Now, I don't know if they were just doing that because maybe the writer wrote those issues or they were trying to sell some old copies because they weren't getting any residuals from any back issue bins back then.
Well, yeah, but Stan Lee was always a big stickler for that. He always thought that, like, there should be one little, he was always trying to get the new reader. So when somebody would just walk on to the newsstand and pick out a comic book, he said it always should be just a panel or a blurb stating what happened or what was going on, like the issue before that. Because, yeah, it does. It lets readers know where they are and it keeps them around.
Well, as he said, and it was quoted by Jim Shooter, and often, you never know that one comic, every comic is somebody's first Marvel comic. Somebody out there, that might be the first Marvel comic they've ever picked up. So you can't be exclusive and not friendly and welcoming. You have to let them into your world and give them a little smidgen of what it's about or what they're about to be transported to, correct?
Oh, that's absolutely correct. I mean, as we were talking about before, do that today. I mean, I don't know what some kid's going to do when they get their first comic book today, because they probably won't know what.
Well, I used to like above the masthead on the first page of all the Marvel comics I used to read growing up, there was a little paragraph about an introduction, if you will, of who that character was you were about to read about. It would say Peter Parker, a mild-mannered teenage boy bitten by a radioactive spider, was imbued by the proportion strength of a spider, and then goes on a crime-fighting spree to become the Amazing Spider. Stan Lee presents The Amazing Spider-Man, you know?
Yeah, yeah, the same with the Hulk one.
They
had a little blurb a quick little intro of what you were reading.
They would call it an elevator pitch now. It was like a one or two sentence introduction, and when that 1 or 2 seconds, you immediately got up to speed about who you were reading about.
Yeah, and a perfect introduction, right? Perfect first issue.
And like we said, the only reason why we all grew up thinking Stan Lee invented the wheel is because, well, it said it right there, Stan Lee presents. Well, he must be God, right?
close to it, Mitch.
And that's what made him the hero to all of us there, regardless of the backstory and the infighting of Kirby and Lee and who made what or whatever. He was always the guy. He was the public face of the company. He was the guy you saw on the talk shows, the Comic-Con circuit. The man was the P.T. Barnum. And we should say that because isn't Stan's birthday December 21st or so? It's coming up on the 94th birthday, right?
Yeah, it's coming up, and he's 94 or 95, Mitch.
Something big, I know that. It's one of those amazing events that God bless him for still being out there. And I was just reading a Captain America reprint the other day that had Stanley Martin Lieber's very first prose in a comic book. It was a 1 or 2 page typewritten story that appeared in Captain America 3, I believe.
Yeah, The Traitor's Revenge. And I got an interesting story about that with Roy Thomas. At the past convention we went to, and I had Roy there, Roy is a history buff. You know, I mean, the guy, you know, he can get dates, pages. He is just a well of knowledge and story. but he can get him from all angles, from a fanboy's perspective, from in the bullpen's perspective, from a creative, whatever. He can just get it all. So it was funny. We were looking at this Stan Lee book together. There's a new hardcover Stan Lee book coming out, or it could be out. It was like a $200 or $100 book. And, it was some of his best stories and things all in there. But they had that story in there, and that was from Captain America number 3. And it was just that those stories that they, without any of the art. And the reason why they had to do that back then is because it could get the post, it would cost cheaper to ship. Is that correct, Mitch?
By putting that in there, they qualify themselves as a periodical or a magazine and not a comic book.
The magazine rates.
Yes.
But in that story, which is very interesting that you brought that up, I actually quizzed Roy, and I wanted to throw him a bone to see if I could get him with anything. And I asked him about that story, and I said, maybe let me ask you this question. I think I asked you, but what did Stan Lee write in that story, The Traitor's Revenge, which was that three-piece story that had Captain America do something for the very first time? And it became legendary.
He threw his shield?
Well, almost. He did throw his shield, but he ricocheted his shield, and then he caught it again.
What? That was the first occurrence of somebody writing about Cap's amazing shield powers?
And I quizzed Roy, and I said, what did Stan Lee first do that? And he said, oh, yeah, he ricocheted the shield, and he catches it. And I'm like, oh, my God, this guy knows everything.
Well, you know what? It's ironic that you mentioned Captain America, because today as we record this, the fans don't know, it is December 7th, a day that will live in infamy to all Americans around the world, as we were viciously attacked by the Japanese Imperial Army in the Pearl Harbor, and it was just, horrendous back then. Obviously, 9/11 is an important date to the folks growing up in the modern age, but to the folks back then, to my dad and all the other kids then and the adults, that was just the end of the world as we knew it as an American. Wouldn't you agree, John?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, and Mitch, let me just mention that since you mentioned your father. Your father was a pretty good-looking guy, and I'm trying to wonder what the hell happened when he had you. But I saw your his military photo. What was he in?
My dad was a United States Marine, 1957 to 1961, and thank you for mentioning that to me. Yesterday, as I was recording this, I realized it was 20 years since my father's passing, and he was a Marine, and he was a great guy. He was the one that gave me my very first comic book and introduced me to the world of comics. When I sat in that car, in the back then, you could sit in the front seat without a safety belt, and I sat in the front seat of the car, and we were in where I grew up in New Haven and West Haven area. And there was Liggett's Pharmacy. And Liggett's Pharmacy, nowadays you have Walgreens and CVS and Rite Aid and all these drugstore chains. But I guess Liggett's was a chain. And we parked out front, and my dad got out of the car to go get a pack of smokes, because unfortunately he was into smoking cigars and cigarettes back then. So as I sat there, and I remember the sun was setting because it was twilight. It was that, the streetlights hadn't come on yet, and it was still a little glow. And there was a yellowish glow coming from inside the Liggett store because it was being backlit. So I could watch my dad as he was paying for his pack of smokes talking to the counter guy. And right next to him, and I swear I can close my eyes and picture time travel right now, there was a spinner rack. And as my dad's chatting it up with the fella, and I'm in the front seat of the car looking through the glove compartment, God knows, finding cough drops or something on the floor and eating them, my dad just looked at the spinner rack, and he spun it around a couple times, and I saw him look at two different books, and he pulled them out of there, and he paid for them. I hope he paid for them. And he walked into the car, and he says, here, I want you to have these. Remember I tell you those stories about the Lone Ranger and Batman and Superman? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, well, I used to read these, and my father bought these books at the same drugstore that I was just in back in 1940. Because my dad was born in 1936. So he said, your grandfather picked these books up for me at the same spot, and I'm picking them up for you. And I want you to hold on to these books and don't throw them away. Because grandma, his mother, my grandma, Amelia, when my dad went off to the Marine Corps, he had all those comics. My grandfather would bring him home comic books every week. Green Lantern, Captain Marvel, Wonder Woman, the first issues of these books, because my dad was 6-7 years old right when all these first issues were coming out. He collected them. He didn't throw them away. He had the good sense to know that they might be worth something. And my mom, who lived nearby, would say, we would go over your dad's house, and he'd have all his comic books, and he would never trade with us. He always kept his perfect, and he would keep them in a big box, and he said, don't throw out my comic books. Those are my comic books. And he collected them, and he kept them in the basement, and this is where the tragedy comes in. He goes off to the Marine Corps in 1957. He comes back to Connecticut in 1961 with my mom and my sister Debbie, and he says, you know, Graham, or Ma, where's my comic books? And she says, and I still don't understand what exactly happened, but the cat, they had a cat, and the cat had kittens in that box on top of the comic books. So she threw them all away. So if there was an amazing amount of afterbirth from this cat that just spewed all over these beautiful four-color adventures that caused her to destroy and throw out every amazing issue, that's what happened to my dad's comic book. So he was lost them all in those years while he was in the Marines. They were all gone. The Green Lantern, everything. Golden Age classics that would have been worth a fortune. So he tells me, do not throw out these books. So it was a Batman and it was a Shadow comic book. And I had those books. And I used to have a blue suitcase that my dad used in the Marines when he was traveling. It was a blue suitcase, and it had stickers all on the outside of all the places he had been to. And that was my long box. It was where I kept my comic books. I would lug this blue suitcase around the summer when I was 4 or 5 years old in my cousin's house. We'd sit there on the porch because we didn't have air conditioning. We'd pop it open, and we'd sit there and read comic books. Any comic book we can get our hands on, Superman, Batman, Shazam, anything. And I said, you can't throw these away because, you know, they're going to be worth something. And those books, as we speak, are downstairs. The suitcase is long gone. But I do still have that legacy of my dad every single day. And I think about that every time I go to a comic book convention.
Do you have those first issues your father gave you?
I do have them. They were ripped and torn because I was stupid enough to actually get a pair of scissors. And I used to cut. You know when they'd have the little corner superheroes like Spider-Man or Captain America up in the corner?
Oh, yeah.
I cut them up. I don't know what I was thinking, but I would cut them up and paste them and make like little stories out of them and just stick them to my wall. And I destroyed some comics.
I know.
You had fun with them. Exactly. A comic book wasn't just a story. It was like an activity book because you would draw on them and you would trace the heroes and you like paper dolls. You would do all kind of stuff with those books back then, you know?
And I would sometimes take the splash pages and pull them out and then stick them on my wall and pretend they were posters.
Absolutely. And it's amazing all the things. And again, that's what led me to want to draw because I would see pictures of John Romita sitting at his table or Jack Kirby. And I'm like, wait, you could get paid to draw comic books? You could make a career out of this? Are you kidding me? You could be Stan Lee? I mean, that was like a dream come true. Other kids wanted to grow up to be Tom Seaver or Reggie Jackson. I wanted to grow up to be John Romita, man.
Wait, so your father collected comics too?
Yes, sir.
I never knew that. Well, that's actually pretty cool. And he got him off do you remember what else was on that spinner rack?
Oh, I could tell you, because I remember going back after I read those voraciously. I had to get more. I was addicted to Twinkies and to comic books, and both have followed me along my lifelong path. But I remember I went back in there, and there were so many obscure titles. I don't know chronologically when these books came out, but I do remember you would see Richie Rich, Casper. Those are the books my mom would get me. The Hot Stuff, The Little Devil. She was like, oh, these are good to read. You know, then there would be Charlton Comics, which were right up the street from us. They were making them in Derby, Connecticut, which was about 6 miles from us. And they had Sad Sack, The Flintstones, a lot of licensed book, Emergency. But I remember the spinner rack was bizarre because I do remember getting Spider-Man Meets the Werewolf by Night, you know, the Marvel team-up issue. And it was
the Marvel team-up one.
Yeah, and I was a kid.
Is that the one that Beth's getting choked by that guy that's like a, he looks like a, He looks like a scarecrow guy, and they're both getting choked in the sewers. It's with Werewolf by Night.
Yeah. But the thing of it is, I thought the werewolf was the same werewolf from the movies, you know, the black and white Wolfman movies.
Yeah.
So I was like, what is going on here? The world is, you know, you're a kid, you don't understand Marvel and DC and the two different worlds, you know, everything's the same. And I'm like, wait, Frankenstein's monster? Because Marvel had all those heroes or villains. And then there's the Frankenstein's monster, the mummy, Dracula. And you'd see these on the newsstands. I remember being terrified of the Dracula comic or Morbius. The living vampire freaked me out. I was like, oh, my God. It was just an amazing cavalcade of comics. But I swear that spinner rack was Prez. Remember Prez, P-R-E-Z?
Yeah, the teenage president.
The teenage president, that freaked me out. I remember getting that book. Arg was on there. Arg was like a horror.
Arg only went for like three issues. Arg predates Crazy Magazine.
Yeah, it was a satirical monster magazine, a comic magazine.
Yeah.
And, geez, so many weird titles. That, oh, Plop? Plop was a really acid-y trip.
Oh, my God, Plop.
That's what I'm saying. I'm reading books that I don't think were meant to be read by four or 5 year old kids or 6 years old because there was some freaky stuff going on.
Did you get Plop off the shelf?
I used to get Plop off the shelf. Yeah, I used to love it for the artwork.
Yeah, because that was almost like an underground comic. You know?
Yeah, but my mom would buy me Plop, you know, and I was like, what would the Plop refer to? Was that the sound of dropping acid?
Yeah, but it was like a stoner comic, you know? You probably smoke a joint and friggin' watch Turn the Pages.
I was pretty much watching Sesame Street and reading Plop, so that explains why I'm so screwed up, you know?
Those were on the shelf, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, that was a good time. So what was it, like 20 cents?
They were all 20 cents, yeah. I got comics when they were 20 cents, and then they went up to 25 cents. I would buy packages of Wacky Pack stickers.
Yeah.
Were there. That was a big thing. Me and my cousin would collect Wacky Packs, and you know, we'd put them all over our banister, our headboard.
But weren't you also getting those Marvel stickers that had like the bubbles on them? Didn't you tell me you got those Marvel stickers that they had like the little sayings on them too?
I had the trading cards.
Yeah, the trading cards.
Yeah, we had the trading cards that had little word balloons, and there was like little cartoon jokes in there. I thought you meant the stickers that I got that I found out years later, I think were drawn by Neil Adams that decorated my door. There's a photograph of me standing in front of my door, and the whole wooden door was just covered with these giant stickers.
Yeah,
that
I remember you sent me that, yeah.
It had to be industrial glue, because once those stickers...
This has had to be all about 74, 75, right?
I was born in 66, so this has to be when I'm about... Now this is a couple years later. But this is about when I was 7 or 8. But I remember my dad trying to get some of those stickers off that door, and the wood was coming off with them, so he wasn't too thrilled.
It's funny you say that, because my brother had, when I was a kid, like the arcade stuff was in, and so we had Pac-Man stickers, Donkey, and my brother had the Pac-Man stickers all along his headboard. And I remember my mom was trying to get them off, and they were scraping off the wood.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We ruined plenty of furniture back then. But, yeah, so long story short, coming around as we get off track here, December 7th, like I said, the day that'll live in infamy, Pearl Harbor. But Captain America, speaking of that, I was reading a book about Captain America, who's become one of my favorite heroes. Like I said, I was a lifelong Spider-Man fan, but as years went by, I liked Captain America a lot more than I did Spidey. Still love them both, but Cap has more, I don't know, more history to him, obviously, and... I can't put a finger on why I like the Captain America of today rather than the Captain America of the 70s, because back then he just seemed like a big Boy Scout. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, but the way Romita drew him, though. Yeah, you know, it's funny how you say that, because my I had a friend of mine, too, that we collected comics together. His name was Joe, and he loved Captain America to the death. This was when Mike Zeck was doing the cover, so we're talking in the 80s here.
Yeah.
But he always had a problem with the Captain America during the 70s. He goes, because every single picture you ever saw a Cap, the Romita stuff, he was always smiling. And I understand what you're talking about today. He's more of a soldier. He's more gritty. And I like that, too, believe me. And that started with Mark Millar with his Ultimates line. That's what kind of made this the Captain America of what he is today. But you got to admit, though, Captain America looked awesome at that time.
Oh, he looked great. And I think they struggled with the character because you know, you got to remember post Vietnam War era, being a soldier wasn't cool. And here you've got a guy who was basically like a World War II veteran, you know, like your grandfather. He was all straight laced and polished, and
he wasn't hip,
exactly. So whenever you saw Cap, you almost rolled your eyes, like, oh, here comes the guy from the VFW hall, you know, he smells like Old Spice, and you know, he's saying 23 Skidoo, and he wants to know what the new Marx Brothers movie's playing. It was like hanging out with your granddad. And Marvel didn't do much to change that persona. You know, they made him that all-American. Because it was being written by guys from World War II, you know?
Yeah, because Kirby came back at that time, too, if you think in the late 70s.
Yeah, and it was almost like we got to see the world through the eyes of a 50-year-old man who had grown up during the war, who had fought the Nazis and the Japanese back in the day. And now he's seeing these hippies running around. So you're reading a reflection of the writer in that Captain America, I believe, you know?
Oh, yeah. And Kirby was writing...
The Mad Bomb.
At that time. The beautiful Kirby cover with Romita Hanks. That's a legendary picture.
Yeah, and then I think what happened is when you did get the younger writers like the Steve Englehart, the hippies, the radical writers of the day, when they got a hold of Cap, they just turned his world upside down because they were saying what they wanted to say to the 50-year-old guys who were running the businesses. Like, hey, man, back off, you know?
Yeah, but I don't think Cap really started taking... He finally started getting a little hip when John Byrne started getting a hold of him. That's when I think Captain America, like in the mid-80s, because he did the Avengers. But then when he started getting hold of, you remember the Baron Blood
stuff? Oh, that was our man Roger Stern, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, but it just Cap started looking good. I think that's when he started becoming a little more accepted because he was becoming a little more gritty. I think a lot of John Byrne's drawings.
Well, I'm going to throw this out there, and I know you love him. My favorite actor of all time, Harrison Ford. I honestly believe it was Raiders of the Lost Ark that showed a hero fighting the Nazis in World War II. That reinvigorated a lot of these writers who fell in love with the Indiana Jones character and said, hey, wait a minute, we've got a guy who fought the Nazis. His name's Captain America. And I think a lot of them tried to infuse the character with that more adventuresome feeling. There was a series that came out by Mark Gruenwald called the Bloodstone series. The thing is basically a Raiders of the Lost Ark ripoff.
No, I agree. As much as I don't like Harrison Ford and that whole thing, sorry, Les, not sorry to you, Mitch, but I'll agree with that because it was basically, see, the thing that Harrison Ford, like the Raiders of the Lost Ark had, it had a swashbuckling, almost like, you know, it was almost like those pirate movies or like
Pirates of the Caribbean
of the 30s, yeah. You know, like it had that kind of swashbuckling.
Errol Flynn, yeah, Robin Hood, yeah.
Yeah, but that's what that character always reminded Indy. Now, sure, he had more flash and balls, and he was gritty, and he was a professor, but it had that kind of, you know, swinging from rooftop, getting away from the people, and, you know, it had a swashbuckling thing to it. But I do think that, yeah, that was such a big movie and such a big series that it permeated into the comic books. Remember, comic books always, don't they always mimic what's going on in society at the time?
Absolutely. So that was for the fun-loving adventurers. They kind of ripped off Indiana Jones. And the other side of the world, we had the gritty, realistic Frank Miller storytelling with the Dark Knight and the Daredevil series going on. And yeah, you're absolutely right. People are trying to reflect the times. Then we had the Reagan era with the Russians, and that comes out in the pages of The Watchmen. All books that are symbols or representative of the times they are written in.
Yeah, and don't forget that the X-Men, the Claremont and Byrne stuff, too, at that time. They were, like, kind of head-to-head with Daredevil.
Well, jump back to Captain America, because, like I said, it being Pearl Harbor Day today, let's talk about Cap for a couple minutes before we wrap it up. What is it about that character that people love so much today? I mean, obviously not the red brown TV movies back when we were kids, or they were horrible. They were absolutely horrible. And then the Matt Salinger, who lives right up the road from me here, JD Salinger's son, who played the Captain America, as we all remember, with the rubber ears and those in that film, the 1991 or two, I believe it came out with. It was laughable. I actually have it on DVD, and I watched it, and it took a couple of sittings to sit through 90 minutes of it because it is so bad. But you know, I do believe at the heart of it, and this is what I'm going to get to. The heart of it, they understand the hero. The execution might not be there, but the man at a time, the innocent young man who was a scrawny little milksop who wants to do what's right and is trying as hard as he can to save his country, to be part of the patriotic way, that's what resonates with everyone. I think that's what made Captain America so enduring to fans in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s and nowadays. What do you think?
Obviously the man out of time thing, but I think the Captain America Civil War kind of got it right when you see Spider-Man and Captain America have that interaction, and it was like, where are you from? And he's like, Queens. And he goes, Brooklyn. It's just that he's an everyman. He's like, the thing about Captain America, he's for the people because he is one of the people, you know, because he really was a guy that didn't have a lot of money. He was the handicapped guy. And I think that it was almost like even in the very first one, the first Avenger, when the doctor's giving him his, he's going to go into the experiment, and he's just saying, like, it's because of your heart, you know, because he fit the mold, like, and it didn't change him. So I think that's what the essence of Captain America is. Like, he's that consummate idealist. He's for the dream. You know, that famous Frank Miller line, he goes, when he says to the general, he goes, the only dream he aspires to is the one of the flag of the people, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I think resonates with. I think that's Captain America's greatest strength. It's that inspiration.
I got chills when you just said that, literally. And it's not because it's cold outside. We're talking about a spirit more so than even Superman, the amazing immigrant from another planet who truth, justice in the American way. I think because he's an alien with superhuman powers, we don't identify him as much as we do with Captain America because, like you said, he was that handicapped kid. He was the guy that was 4F that was not qualified to do it. But he didn't stop trying. What's that?
I said, yeah, and he never changed, even though he became the super guy, like with the super soldier serum. His heart and his mind always stayed the same. So just to go back to that quote, the quote was from the Frank Miller. It was that Daredevil. I forget the issue, but when he says, I'm loyal to nothing, General, except the dream.
And I always,
when he holds the flag.
I think it's funny that you mentioned Daredevil because I do remember when they had the Civil War. Frank Castle, the Punisher, the ruthless vigilante, he had such a tough time. He wouldn't fight against Captain America. Do you remember that? That was like, it was impossible. It was like shooting his own mother. He could not do that.
Yeah, it's when Frank, that Civil War, and Frank Castle killed those two villains, and then Cap just beats the piss out of him.
Yeah.
And they were like, why didn't you fight back? He's like, not to him.
Yeah, and it's amazing because even though he's a ruthless vigilante out for justice, he's his own judge, jury, and executioner, he respects Captain America and what he symbolizes so much. It's almost as if Frank Castle wishes he could be Captain America because he was a soldier. He went there. He lost his family.
And don't you remember when he's the one that picked up Captain America's mask? Remember that
he did.
Before he got assassinated in that?
Yeah.
For a while, he had that mask with the star on it, too, that Punisher look. But this is why I always believe that Captain America is the most powerful and the most dangerous man in the Marvel Universe. And the reason being is because he inspires everyone else to be better. So, like, that's why you have a god, Thor, that'll fight for him. Like, Hercules, that will fight for him. These are gods that have lived for millennia, but yet they'll go for Cap, and they look up to him.
Right.
And he's just a normal guy. And that's what's Captain America's greatest power. Even Tony Stark, being the blunt, arrogant, and all that, he can never be Captain America because it's like, remember when he says, the Robert Downey Jr. says, he goes, I wish I could punch you in your perfect teeth.
Yeah.
Remember he told
yeah.
that? But
yeah.
just that line exemplifies what Captain America is. He has to do it because it's the right thing to do.
Well, and we all believe that we're doing the right thing, whether we are or we are not, sometimes in the modern day, because I've always aspired, growing up, just with, you know, like I said earlier in the show when we talked about my dad, who just said, you know, don't ever swear. I wish I could stick to that, because he goes, cursing is the language of the uneducated. That's what my father told me. And this is, like I said, the man's been gone 20 years now. But there's certain little tidbits of wisdom that just resonate daily. And every time I curse, I do a double take or I bite my tongue, because I remember my dad, who never swore. He was in the Marine Corps. He worked construction, and he put himself through night school to get a college degree for 10 years. He'd work construction during the day, come home, have dinner, get his books out, and then go down to the University of New Haven and get a degree. He went to college after that. So, and he would always tell me, education is king, always be educated. And cursing is the language of the uneducated. When you struggle to communicate and you can't in a civilized way, you resort to cursing. That was what my father always told me. So I always, wow. I always remember that. And I always try to make sure, and I cringe.
Yeah, you try. You try, Mitch.
I try, but you know, the Italian side of me just comes out and I start throwing my hands around. And I get passionate. That's my mom's side of the family, the Italian. And I just go after you like the Sopranos sometimes. But I try. I regret. And then the other thing is the Captain America aspect. Like I said, my dad imbued in me, and I reinforced through the comics and stuff, is you try to do the right thing, and you always tell the truth. And the truth, some people say, is based on a certain point of view. That's from Star Wars. What you believe is true is what you your reality determines. Your perception determines your reality. That's also from Star Wars. How you see things is how you believe they really are. You know?
And so this goes back to what Captain America, this goes back to Captain America, correct?
It does, because he believes that the world is a certain way, and sometimes, right or wrong, he does realize later on he might be wrong, because he tries to stick to the Constitution and all the rules of the world and, you know, the laws of society. But he does, like you said before, he is the everyman, so he does put himself in the other guy's shoes, and he'll understand where they're coming from, you know?
And that's why he's so much better to relate than Superman, because he isn't this all-powerful guy. I mean, he is a super soldier serum. He's more than man, but, like, he can get killed by a bullet. But I love that. See, because, you know, I get some arguments with people, and they'll say, like, well, why does he wear this suit? Like, he can get killed so easy. I go, but that's the point. He's the symbol. And he's the guy leading the Avengers. He's right in the battlefield, right in the middle where you can see him. And he's the easiest to get killed.
And you know what's funny? You know when they show the trailer for Captain America, the First Avenger, do you know what scene bugged me the most? Not the movie, just the coming attraction for it, the trailer. What happened in that trailer? Can you pick it out? That bugged the hell out of me about Captain America.
That bugged you? No, go ahead, tell me.
When the door kicked open and he's walking in with the Howling Commandos, he's got Dum Dum Dugan behind him. Not the fact that he was leading the Howling Commandos, that's another story, but the fact that he had a revolver in his hand and he was shooting a gun, that bothered me so much, because my Cap never had a gun.
Yeah, I see that, but that, because you come from the Cap of the 70s, but I thought didn't you just say that you like the Cap today, but the Cap today is more of a soldier.
That's what I'm saying, but I remember, maybe it's because of the cartoons we watched, he never had a gun in the 60s. He always had that shield, that amazing shield that was used as a weapon and for protection, and he would disarm people with it. So when he just walked into a room with a shotgun... I'm like, wait, Cap's got a gun. He's just like anybody else. And I'm not getting into NRA and gun laws and all that.
Either, but I think it's more updating Captain America to what he is, because this, you know, you, it's like your father. Your father's not a bad guy. He's a good man. But he went overseas. He fought for the Marines, and he probably killed a bunch of people. But I'm just saying, like, but he was doing the job for the country.
You were doing it for a just cause, yeah.
Yeah, for a just cause.
Well, I'm going to tell you this, too. You might think, wow, Mitch is more liberal than I ever thought, and some people might be pissed about it, but I'm the biggest proponent and supporter of the police and the army than you can believe. But our house, growing up Italian in a bad neighborhood in New Haven, a lot of gunplay, a lot of local gangsters, there were no guns in our house. There was not allowed, because my dad, who was a sharpshooter and a marksman, had medals and everything in the Marine Corps, he wasn't a coward. He said a gun was designed for one thing, to kill people. That's what a gun's for. Now, my grandfather had guns. He would go hunting, I'd go over his house. There was guns there. I fired guns myself. But to me, I have no desire to own a weapon. I have no gun. So if you're listening to this and want to break in, come on in. All I'll get you is with a baseball bat. But that's another. That's more lethal than anything. My baseball bat, and my Captain America shield. I'll go at you. But again, maybe because of my dad saying, you know, we don't have guns in this house. You know, you also have the eye for an eye.
You have to contemporize it, make him contemporary, like, because he was a soldier. And
yeah.
What is he doing there? It's like, is he just going to be punching people while everybody's shooting and all that stuff? No, I mean, like, he's not doing it because he's a murderer. He's doing it because...
He's defending himself. No, but yeah. Wait, going back, I always thought it was bizarre, even as a kid, that Bucky... You'd see shots of Bucky with a submachine gun, you know, mowing down people. I'm like, what is he, like 14 years old? And I remember when my son Owen was little, I'd let him read Captain America comic books. And he would question that, too. And he's like 8 or 9 years old reading comic books. He goes, hey, how old is Bucky? I said, well, he's the mascot. He's like maybe 14 or 15, maybe 16. I don't know. Why has he got a machine gun? I'm like,
blame that on Kirby.
Oh, my son thought that was so bizarre that you saw a teenage kid running around with a machine gun, because nowadays they'd be like, what are you, nuts? You know?
Yeah, that's all Kirby. That's all Kirby. But the truth is, he was a private, right? Wasn't he like, Bucky was? Bucky Barnes?
Oh, absolutely. He was the camp mascot. His dad, according to lore, was part of the company, and he died, and they kept Bucky around because he was an orphan, basically. So they allowed him to be on the base, and
he was a soldier. He was out there.
If you go to, they retcon this. In fact, I was just reading it the other day. They eventually made Bucky not just be the mascot at Camp Lehigh, but they made him a soldier. So he became a private, and he would go overseas with Steve Rogers anyway, and they'd fight. But you know. People would put two and two together. Like when they met the Howling Commandos, there's a good book that just came out there when Cap met Sergeant Fury and Dum Dum Dugan. And they knew who he was. They'd see afterwards, they go to a bar to drink, and there's this big blonde guy. And, you know, they say, hey, what are you doing here? You're also the same build as Captain America. What's this little scrawny kid you got with you, Bucky Barnes? Hey, isn't that Bucky? I mean, it wasn't hard to put two and two together. A kid's named Bucky Barnes, and there's a guy that fights with Captain America named Bucky. Hey, that must be the same guy.
Yeah, we don't ask those questions.
We don't ask those questions. It's right in front of you. It's on Front Street, and you're like, yeah, I don't think so. You know? Well, that's the other thing, too. Speaking of, we're going long on this one, but Sergeant Fury was one of my favorite comic books because I'll tell you why, they were cheap. You could get Sergeant Fury books for like 50 cents because nobody wanted to read them. So we would read all those old Sergeant Fury, the Dick Ayers would draw them, you know, we would read those books. So when Raiders of the Lost Ark came out, I actually thought it was like the ultimate Nick Fury story because Harrison Ford had that look with the razor stubble, you know, and he's fighting Nazis. I thought if they made a Sergeant Fury movie, that Raiders of the Lost Ark would have been it.
Well, absolutely. But you want to know, it could also work when Steranko took it over, because when Steranko took it over, first off, Nick Fury became him, if you could tell. I mean, it's so obvious to tell, but he was taking what was the big Sean Connery.
Oh, the James Bond thing, yeah.
Oh, you could tell what was huge at that time. That was like 69, 68.
Yeah.
And you knew, like, what he was. He was James Bond on steroids, and it was... So a good movie could be also used that way. And I'm not talking about the Samuel L. Jackson. I don't want to, I'm sorry, but I don't want my Nick Fury's not black. He's a white guy. And I hate to say it, but that's the truth. And I think if you could use either one of those it could be a great movie. I would love to have like a slick, could you imagine back then when James Bond was at its height and they did a Nick Fury thing, from the comic
book. Well, there was also a bunch of other knockoff movies like Matt Helm that starred Dean Martin, and then James Coburn was in a movie called Our Man Flint. There was a lot of secret agents, and just recently, right up the road from me, he just passed away. He lived right up the street in Westport from me, Robert Vaughn.
Get Smart
was a parody of all that. Yeah, that was happening at the same time. And yeah, that was the thing. They could have made, well, it was... Jim Steranko's Nick Fury, more of a takeoff of the James Bond, essence than anything else. I mean, if it wasn't for Sean Connery, it wasn't for spies being the big deal, maybe Steranko never would have gone down that road.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And the funny thing is, go back to Steranko. I know me and you have been with Steranko forever. We both know Steranko pretty well. We see him at so many
shows.
He's
a great guy. Strongest handshake you'll ever have.
Yeah, and I actually had I didn't drink, but I was with the Marvel bullpen and convention. But I will say this, like, you can say what you want about Steranko, but when you look at that art, especially his stuff from the Nick Fury stuff, I mean, that on a nice clean, like an omnibus or something.
Yeah.
That un-freaking believable stuff that he was pumping out there, the pop art and like how you ball. It was just so slick, so perfect. I think it was better than James.
Well, I just read his run on Captain America where Rick Jones becomes the new Bucky Barnes. And there's a couple pages in there where it just goes beyond the panel. The artwork pours out all over the place like a Salvador Dali painting, very abstract, very psychedelic. You know what I'm talking about? The skulls in the background, the death image. It's out there. I mean,
as good as it kept, and I loved his Hulk. The way he drew the Hulk in that 110 and cover, I love that. It's just a scary, scary, long, lanky Hulk. But I like, as good as he did on Cap, I'm going to go with his. I think his Nick Fury stuff was even better. That's just me.
Well, no, as I sit here, I look up at my wall here of my Marvel masterpieces, and I do have Nick Fury Volume 2 and 3 of the collected ones. I don't have Volume 1, so if anybody's out there trying to give me a Christmas present, I'm trying to get Volume 1, but unfortunately, it's out of print and it's crazy money. It'd be cheaper to go back and just buy the issues than it would be the reprint, for God's sakes, of the first Nick Fury. And that's why I said before, we love those omnibuses because it's a chance to own them once again in brilliant reprinted, beautiful color and bright
those
white pages.
Awesome.
And then they also have the letters pages, which I love reading those and finding names of people that are going to become future comic book writers and artists in the pages of the letter columns. Those are always trippy, too.
Fantastic.
But I got to ask you this. So real quick, I mean, we went way over today, and God knows why, but we're talking about Captain America, and why not? It's a super-sized super soldier edition of the Power Cosmic. Is Captain America, and like I said, I try to strive for that, tell the truth, stick to your guns, have a very strong character or spirit, and you know, try to emulate the good qualities of Cap, have good values, and we all can be Captain America. Just, and again, to get a little religious, whether you worship Jesus, whether you worship Buddha or Muhammad, all these stories, even comic books, they're designed behind a morality, a good versus evil, a good moral code. They're all stories. They're fables. They're Aesop's fables put together with spandex. They're trying to tell us this, whether, again, your point of view, this is how you should be. This is what you should do. You should help your fellow man. You should take care of those who can't take care of themselves. You should put your hand out to the guy who's on the ground and lift him up. I mean, those are the things that make you a superhero. You don't have to have Vita Rays. You don't have to have super soldier serum or come from another planet. But, and I don't mean to get on my pulpit here, but isn't that why we love comic books? Isn't that why we go back and why we aspire and why we treasure these so much? Is because they've imbued us with a sense of right and wrong and things we aspire to. Is Captain America relevant, or is Captain America a sucker? Do people look at that and shake their head?
There will always be a place for Captain America because despite what goes on in the world, we always want to be better. And, you know, during our faults or whatever, when you look at, I don't know if anybody could be Captain America, but when you read about this guy, it gives us a better thing of saying, like, well, okay, maybe I can't be that, but maybe I can do something a little better in life. Like, I don't have to do that. Or, you know, maybe I can quit smoking or quit doing whatever it may be. And I always believe that there's a place for that. And that's why I always loved Cap. I have to admit, Captain America and Spider-Man, and Captain Marvel, but Captain Marvel came later, the Shazam. But when I was a kid, they inspired me because Spider-Man's life could have been so much better with him not being Spider-Man. It could have been just easier, but he did it because it was the right thing to do. Same with Captain America. He was a guy out of time. He was lonely. You know, he just Steve Rogers was, you know, he was, if you think about what he was going through, it was easier for him being Captain America, but like he was out of place, but yet he still found himself that there was a place that people needed. You know, he always had a calling, like, I have to lead these people. I have to be better. And it was always hard for him, too, sometimes. But, like, there's always a place for that. And that's what heroes are. Superman has that, too. But he doesn't have that real-world feeling because, you know, he's so all-powerful. But I do.
And Batman, I honestly don't think we can identify with Batman because none of us are a billionaire.
No. And see, but the thing about Batman, it was too perfect. Okay, yeah, sure, he kind of went against the grain. He was a normal guy, but, like, he had access to everything. Spider-Man didn't. Peter Parker couldn't pay rent, and he could have just went out there, robbed a bank, or took money from
people. You know what? I just think you hit the nail on the head. I just realized why I like Batman, I don't love Batman. I read the comics. I hate these great stories, some good movies here and there. But maybe that's what it is. Like you said, I can't relate to what it is to a billionaire. Batman's never want for nothing. I mean, if he wants to go make a super telescope to help him find the Joker, he's got the money and the technology at his disposal to go do that. Where the Marvel guys are dirt poor, struggling to make a dime every day. And yet they sacrifice themselves to go help out their fellow man. And meanwhile, they can't pay the rent. I think you've hit the nail on the head.
Well, think about that. And this is what Billy Batson had. He was picked for Captain Marvel because he had that good soul. But I'm just saying, like, because he was an orphan, you know, he was, and then he was given those powers because despite being poor, and if he found a couple bucks, he would give it to somebody else. But I'm just saying, like, yes, the Marvel characters were more imperfect. I mean, I don't know if you remember one of those, I forget the issue, but those early Fantastic Fours, they couldn't pay their rent on the Baxter Building.
Yeah, and that was in the movie, too. I thought that, again, Fantastic Four movie, much maligned, has some really cool moments in there, like as Stan Lee as Willie Lumpkin, the mailman, delivers a pile of bills to Reed Richards, and they all say overdue, past due, foreclosure. That, to me, is Marvel right there.
Yeah, absolutely. They were the more gritty heroes. They were the more real-world heroes. I mean, look, case in point, look at Matt Murdock. I mean, he's a guy that was, like, he wasn't a rich attorney, and they weren't making ends meet, and he was blind on top of everything else, but, like, he still was, like, protecting the people through, obviously through his legal means and all that, but in so many cases, how many times did he not get paid and stuff? But yet he kept doing it.
And maybe that's why we didn't like Tony Stark, because I got to be honest with you, before the movies, when we've said it here before, I hated Iron Man. He was like a...
It's funny you said that, because I always said it was Tony Stark and Doctor Strange I always thought were DC characters, because despite Doctor Strange, he was rich too because he was a surgeon. He had everything given to him. He was an arrogant prick. And same thing with Tony Stark. It's funny, huh, Mitch?
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and they both had mustaches, so that also has something to do with it.
That was Errol Flynn. That was Stan Lee and his whole Errol Flynn stuff.
No, but yeah, that is true. I never liked Doctor Strange because, like I said when I reviewed the movie, I said, well, before his accident, he was an arrogant prick, that, you know, money, and somebody on the show said, aren't all doctors like that? And I'm like, well, no, I'm not saying that, but you did not like Stephen Strange. And one of the problems I had with that movie is I didn't see that shift in character so much where he stopped being selfish and became selfless. I didn't see that, but other people said it was in there. That's why I didn't like it. Because like you said, you don't root for that guy. There has to be a lot going on before you say, yeah, I really like Doctor Strange, you know?
No, right. And you always root for the underdog. And Spider-Man will always be an underdog. You know, think about that. He always will be because he's always kind of looking up.
Yeah, but like I said, he's a loser, except when he puts the mask on. But in recent years with Dan Slott, who was a guest at my show this year, they've changed it. So Peter Parker is now the head of his own corporation. He's successful. He's a scientist. And I got him, and God knows, I hope Dan doesn't hear us, but I have actually stopped reading Spider-Man, my book that I've got every time. Because that's not my Peter Parker.
You want your Peter Parker? Get the omnibus, the Stan Lee and Steve Ditko Spider-Man. That's what I have, Volume 1. and read those first 36 issues with the annuals 1 and 2. And that's all you need.
Yeah, honestly, because Peter Parker shouldn't be worried about, you know, annual reports and stuff. That's not Peter Parker.
No, he should be worried about Aunt May.
Yeah, or J. Jonah Jameson trying to set him up for something.
Or making rent, or helping her pay with the rent, or like, you know.
Or having a cold and sneezing in your mask, you know.
Yeah, and unbelievable.
So anyway, to wrap things up in this special extra-length double-sized edition of the Power Cosmic. This is the first one-hour show we've ever done because we've got off. This is our Christmas present to you, the listeners out there. We've given you a double dose of Power Cosmic podcasting power today on the show here. And like I said, this might be the last episode people hear before Christmas because we've got two more in the can. And we're going to take a little break at Christmas time because we all have lives and families and such. What would you want to wish out there to our listeners, John? Any sentiment, any year-end resolutions you want to pass on?
A year-end resolution?
Or advice, like, or whatever.
Okay, advice. What still, despite the chaos that's going on in the world, I know, like, the political mumbo-jumbo and everything, let's all still love one another. And everybody thinks it's going to be the end of the world. They thought it was going to be the end of the world 4 years ago, 8 years. It's not. You know what? Read a comic book. Enjoy yourself. Start getting into other people's businesses. Live a happy life. Give your kids a kiss. Give your wife a kiss. Give your husband a kiss. And be nice to each other.
And what I'm going to say is, as much as the world has come together, and I talked about it last time with podcasting and social media, I do believe we've become, it should be called anti-social media. Because people have become more vicious. Because you no longer can have a conversation with somebody without being just horrible. I mean, the comments that come out, no one can have an opinion anymore without pissing somebody off, and then they just get those most vile attacks on them whatsoever. I am hoping out there this Christmas, as they say, peace on earth, goodwill towards men, that we try to, at least for a moment, adapt that philosophy when it comes to talking to people online or just, again, you don't have to agree, and like John said, you don't have to agree with everybody out there, whether they like this or that, or vote for this guy or worship that guy. But yeah, can't we just, and sounds cliche, just get along, even for a brief moment, and like go read a comic book. There's no infighting unless you're reading The Civil War with Iron Man and Captain America. But for the most part, everybody gets along, everybody gets together, they try to do good, they try to help their fellow guy and woman and kids and such like that. And let's try to look at the world through the innocence of a child, once again, who is reading about the heroics of a Captain America and a Spider-Man and a Superman and says, I want to aspire to that guy. You wouldn't see Captain America on a keyboard bad-mouthing Iron Man on Facebook, would you, John?
Absolutely. And they wouldn't. You got to be bigger than that. Like, it's like, hey, not everything goes your way in the world, and God knows that happens to me, and there's something people I got to deal with, and I'm sure I rub people the wrong way too. But you know what? Hey, I try to do the best I can, put food on my daughter's plate, and just try to be as good as a person. And case in point, Mitch, this is why we do this. Nobody's really listening, and we just do this because we're fans, and we like to put some good stuff out there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Somebody goes, how many listeners do you have the Power Cosmic? I go, sometimes I don't care if there's anybody out there because John and I like talking about this. This is what we do when we get together. And then the idea came up of why don't we just put a microphone out that because some other people might want to be a fly on the wall and get involved and listen to our bits of trivia and our nostalgia. And that's why we do it. So whether you've listened to this once or never again, or we're talking to dead air out there, as long as somebody out there listened and had a good time for a couple minutes, you became part of our small circle of friends. Right, John?
And that's that.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy Hanukkah. Whatever else you're into. Or just, hey, make mine Marvel or go read a DC comic book as long as you're out there having fun. That's it. Good night.
Christmas Eve in Gotham City. Is it our imagination, or is the city more peaceful than usual? Has the magic of Christmas silenced the screaming sirens, the whine of bullets, the thousand frightening voices of terror in the city at night? We find Batman and Robin wondering about the same thing as we join them.
You know, Robin, it's been a pleasure just relaxing at home for a change.
Yeah, no special calls for help from the police or anybody. And I kind of like it for a change, too.
The only thing on our schedule for tonight is the Christmas party at the Southside Mission down on Skid Row. And come to think of it, we better get going.
Okay.
I'll get it. Hello?
Hello. Is this Batman?
Yes.
I have a singing telegram for you.
How nice. Sing away.
I wish you a deadly Christmas. I wish you a deadly Christmas. I wish you a deadly Christmas and no more New Year's.
Who is this?
I can assure you, friend, if you go out tonight, you won't live long enough to find out.
What was that all about?
No, nothing. Just some creep crawling under the woodwork. Come on, let's get to the party. I don't want to be late.
And as they make their way through the shadowy streets of the city...
Don't turn around, Robin, but I think someone's following us.
How do we handle it?
When we reach the corner just ahead, slip around fast and we'll grab him when he comes by. Ready? Now.
He's coming closer. Okay. Now. Gotcha!
Oh, I'm so sorry, madam. I thought...
How dare you! I'm going to call the police! Help! Help!
She's too hysterical to listen to explanations.
We better get out of here fast.
Are you sure someone was following us?
Well, I thought... If I wasn't sure then, I am now. Over here, quick. In this doorway.
Did you see where the shots came from?
Right across the street. We're trapped.
Hey, Batman! Why don't you just walk out nice and easy like when your little friend and get this over with? Decked him all with an M3 volley. Fa-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Tis the reason I'm so jolly. Fa-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Now I know who that is. It's Rudy Snow, alias Rudolph the Red-Nosed Hitman. Hey, Rudy.
Oh, you remember me, eh?
How about a deal, Rudy? You let us go and I'll let you go.
Let me go? Ha, ha, ha. That's very funny, but you're just wasting time, Batman.
What do we do? Your bluff didn't work.
It was no bluff. Watch this.
The Batarang, of course. It can go around corners. Works like a boomerang.
Here she goes.
Oh! Bullseye!
There you are, Captain.
It's Rudolph, the Red-Nosed Hitman. Must be wanted in a dozen states.
And you got him. See you later.
Hey, wait a minute. Any other charges besides assault with intent to murder and illegal possession of a deadly weapon?
Yes. Charge him with disturbing the peace on Christmas Eve.
Don't you think it would be better to go the rest of the way by Batmobile?
Oh, I don't think so. With Rudy in jail, we shouldn't have any more trouble. And it's such a nice, clear night for walking.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. Da-da-da-da-dee-doo, da-da-da-da.
Look at that crazy driver. He must be drunk, heading right at us. And his light shining right in our eyes.
Quick, use the bat ropes.
Flinging their ropes so that they catch onto a ledge two stories up on the building behind them, the two clamber up out of harm's way as the killer car, driving right up on the sidewalk, goes out of control.
Phew, what a mess. Do you recognize either of those two characters?
Do I ever? This one, the driver, is Maxie the Minstrel Man, bouncer at a sleazy go-go joint downtown.
What a name!
Fancied himself a song and dance man, but soon discovered his only talent was beating up helpless drunks.
Any other one? Look, he's dressed in a Santa Claus suit.
It's Sammy, the Southside Santa. For years, he's been a fixture in the Christmas scene down there. I don't get it. He's been involved in petty larceny, but never anything like this.
Look, he's still alive, trying to say something.
You're right. Sammy, it's me, Batman. Can I do anything for you?
No, no. Just listen. Just listen. I didn't want to be in on this. He made me.
Who, Sammy? Who made you?
I could never kill.
He's gone. Poor Sammy. Really as gentle a man as you'd ever meet.
Well, one thing is for sure. Someone is out to get us.
And whoever it is knew exactly when we went out tonight and where we were going.
Someone at the Southside Mission?
Yeah, the Southside Mission. After we call the police to clean up here, we're going to take a good look at that place. Seems to me there's more going on down there than a Christmas party for the down and out.
In the Southside Mission, run and financed almost exclusively through the efforts of Dr. Jonathan Carroll, 100 of the less fortunate of Gotham City are enjoying a delicious turkey dinner with all the trimmings.
God bless old Dr. John. This is the first good meal I've had in a month.
I don't know what we'd do down here without him.
When I broke me arm a month ago, he fixed it up and wouldn't charge me a cent.
Look, he's getting up on the stage. He's going to speak. Hooray for Dr. John. Yay, hooray.
Thank you, Fred. I hope you're enjoying the meal. And don't be afraid to ask for second. Now, don't worry. I'm not going to bore you with any speeches. I wish we could have had some musical entertainment tonight. But instead... Batman and Robin, just in time. Come in, come in.
That's Dr. Carroll. He runs the place, and he's the one who invited us down here.
You think he may be the one that...
Awfully hard to believe, but let's play it straight. Well, Dr. John, nice to see you, and nice to be here. Quite an affair you've put together here.
Oh, I had lots of help from my friends out there, like Helen and William and Mrs. McCready there at the front table. Hi, Mrs. Mack, and especially Rodney Do-Good.
Rodney Do-Good?
Yes, Rodney's a regular here and practically my right-hand man. He's right over... Oh, not there. Must have stepped out for a minute. He'll probably be right back.
But Rodney Do-Good at that moment is up to no good. In his room in a dingy lodging house right across the street from the mission, we see a very different man from the gentle derelict befriended by Dr. John.
Everything I tried failed. My warning not to go out didn't frighten him away. Two attempts to eliminate him were bungled. This time we will not fail. You got it straight now. When you hear the singing, that's when you make your entrance.
Only one thing, boss. If you goes back in there, ain't Batman gonna recognize you and blow the whole thing?
Don't worry. I doubt if even the brilliant Batman will be able to tell that Dr. John's most successful example of rehabilitation, Rodney Do-Good, and escaped convict Rodney Crawfield are one and the same person.
Meanwhile, back at the mission...
My friend, I'm sure you all know Batman and his young friend Robin. Batman, won't you say a few words?
Okay, but just as few as I possibly can. I am delighted to be here and see all of you. And I promise you and Dr. John I'll always be a friend of the Southside Mission. Thank you.
Ah, Rodney, there you are. Come up and meet Batman.
It's an honor to shake your hand, sir.
Glad to meet you, Rodney. Dr. John's told me a lot about you.
Thank you. Can I get you something from the kitchen? Some cake, perhaps some coffee?
Sounds good to me. Something strangely familiar about this guy.
And Dr. John, why not start the carol singing? I think you'll enjoy it, Batman. Somehow it seems to take on a special meaning down here. I'll be right back.
Good idea. See what I mean, Batman? He's such a good man.
Yeah, I guess so. What did Rodney mean by special meaning? I wonder.
How about it, everybody? Feel like singing?
Yeah!
Yes! Let's go!
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Very good. Now, how about...
Silent night, holy night. All is calm, all is bright, round yon virgin mother and child, holy infant
so tender and mild, sleep in heavenly peace.
Yeah, sleep in heavenly peace, Batman.
But with the fine-tuned reflexes of the super athlete that he is, Batman leaps to a chandelier hanging from the ceiling above the tables and swings like a trapeze artist the whole length of the hall, landing on top of a very surprised would-be assassin.
That makes three down tonight.
Good going, Batman.
Beside himself in rage, an infuriated Roger Crothfield witnesses the failure of his third attempt on the life of Batman.
Fools! Incompetent fools! All of them! I should have known. If you want a job done right, do it yourself.
Throwing all caution to the winds, he grabs a rifle hidden in the kitchen, rushes to the stage, and aims at Batman, who is so busily engaged in tying up a dazed and befuddled Fingers that he doesn't see the rifle aimed at his back.
Your luck has run out this time, Batman.
Rodney, no!
Just as Rodney pulls the trigger, Dr. John pushes the rifle barrel up, and the shot goes harmlessly into the ceiling.
You old fool! I should have got rid of you a long time ago. See how you like this rifle barrel over your head. Oh! And now I'm getting out of this crummy joint once and for all.
Running out the back door, he races up the fire escape to the roof with Batman close on his heels.
You might as well give up, Rodney. I remember you now, and I'll put you behind bars again, just the way I did 6 years ago.
Oh, no, you won't, Bird Brain.
Now, missed again, Rodney. Ready or not, here I come.
And then begins a wild chase across the rooftops of Gotham City, the frenzied efforts of the criminal to escape making him an even match for the super-smooth running machine we know as Batman.
Maybe you can hitch a ride with Santa Claus, Rodney. He'll be coming any minute now.
This'll shut you up, smart mouth.
You're running out of bullets, Rodney, and looks like you're running out of space, too. Look ahead.
To his horror, Rodney sees that the rooftop of the next building is over 30 feet away.
Give it up, Rodney. I've got you trapped.
Oh, no, you haven't.
And Rodney races forward in a desperate leap for freedom.
Rodney! Don't!
It is an hour later at the mission. The police and all the guests have gone.
How do you feel now, Dr. John?
Fortunately, it was a glancing blow, so I'll be all right. But the shock of learning about Rodney.
Yeah, imagine using the mission as a recruiting center and headquarters for his gang of crooks.
That's why he didn't want me to reach here alive. And he would have succeeded if it hadn't been for you, Dr. John.
And if it hadn't been for you and Robin, who knows what would have happened to me in the Southside mission? How can I ever...
Listen, the bells.
Midnight. It's Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Batman, Robin.
And Merry Christmas to you.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Dr. John.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.